The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Today, we're going to introduce a new segment. I'm going to call it Ask a Libertarian. And it's going to be, basically, we're going to field questions that we are receiving just daily from libertarians, non-libertarians. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the concerns that are on people's minds. And some of these concerns are on the minds of people who strongly believe in government, who are maybe Democrats or Republicans. And some of these questions are actually coming in from libertarians. These are libertarians who want to say, well, I really believe in these ideas and they make a lot of sense to me, but there's still some questions that I have. There's some things that I want to have clarified. And so today we're going to take a few questions. The first questions are coming from Keith Nolan. He's a registered libertarian in Tennessee, and he also voted for Gary Johnson in 2012. But he still has questions, and that's the great thing about libertarians. Libertarians are people who are, they're critical thinkers. They're people who really want to understand how things work and why they work. All right, first question. With a free market, how do you protect young entrepreneurs against the power and influence of older established businesses? So the idea is, if we have a free and completely unregulated market, how do we protect these younger people from the influence of those who've already been in business for a very long time? Now, this is something that I really feel comfortable speaking about because, right now I'm a youngish entrepreneur, but, 15 years ago, I was certainly a young entrepreneur. I was just out of college, and I was starting my own business. And what I saw was very interesting. What I saw was that the regulations weren't actually designed to make it easier for me. They were designed to make it easier for the people already in power, who already had established businesses. The regulations weren't built to pave the way for me. They were made to make it harder to get into. See, what we often see happening is that the established businesses, they don't want threats. They don't want young entrepreneurs coming up with the next great idea. What they want is to keep those entrepreneurs out. Now, you can't keep entrepreneurs out with just pure business because those guys will figure out some kind of a way. Entrepreneurs were feisty. So you can't keep them out business-wise. You can't block their innovations because entrepreneurs were creative. So what do? You turn to law. You turn to regulations. You make it harder to start up a business. As a simple example, anytime you add a whole pile of regulations, that makes it harder for startups. You know why? Because startups don't usually have huge legal departments. If you compare my business to one of my much larger competitors, they have a legal department with many, many lawyers. I don't. So if the government adds 5 or 10 new regulations, it doesn't affect them. They have an army of lawyers. But it's going to affect the young entrepreneurs who simply don't have that. Regulations are actually designed to favor the older established businesses. Free markets treat everybody equally. Now listen, an established business is going to have a leg up in a free market. There's no question about it. But it's going to be something that's at least reasonable and fair, and something that you can compete against. Next question coming in is all again from Keith Nolan. In fact, we're going to take a bunch of Keith's questions right now because these are good questions. I like these questions. How do you stop greed and exploitation without collective bargaining? In other words, without unions, how do you stop exploitation? And so that actually goes to a common misunderstanding, which is that there's a common misunderstanding that libertarians don't like or don't believe that people should be allowed to have unions. And that's simply false. Libertarians do believe that you shouldn't force people to join unions. That's one of the reasons that we oppose the teachers' unions. The teachers' unions say that if you want to teach at a public school, you have to join the teachers' union. That's unfair. That's silly. So we certainly do oppose certain legal practices. But if all the people who work at a company, you know, whether a big company or a small company, want to start a union, libertarians have absolutely no opposition to that. That's freedom of association. That's your natural right to negotiate however you see fit. Now, the next question is, can a free market really work with 330 million people? My answer, absolutely. In fact, I think it would work even better with 7 billion people. The more people you have in a free market, the better it is. And here's why. That's just more innovation. The great thing about a free market is that you can come up with newer and better ideas. And those new ideas do two things. One, the new idea itself often sells, but often those new ideas create great opportunities for many other people. I'm going to give you an example. Let's say you have something like the iPhone. The iPhone comes out, and along with it, the Apple App Store. The great thing about that is now you have jobs for app creators. Thousands of them, millions of them. There are literally millions of people who make apps. Those are new jobs. Those are new opportunities. But guess what? Each of those apps, that can create opportunities for add-ons. That can create ideas for future apps. You're creating a marketplace, and that marketplace thrives when you have more people. The more people you have, the more it thrives. Now let's get to the next question. I hear a lot of you lip service to it's the government's fault, but you must realize the government is occupied by the friends of the multinational corporation they're supposed to regulate. As Ross Perot once said, the foxes are guarding the hen house. Is it the government's fault or is that the corporations are people? This is a really interesting point, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying before, that right now the multinational corporations or the single national corporations, or just the large local businesses, are the ones who have the most influence on government. Those are the people who basically end up shaping the regulations in their own favor. So the question, is it the government? Well, the thing is, the government is not usually by itself its own thing. It's a tool being used by someone against someone. Very often, it's a tool being used by corporations against their competitors. It's being used to help corporations and being used to hurt startups. So how do we address that? Now, you can make a law. You can try to make a law that says government can't give any special favors to corporation. But I guarantee you, or that it can't give any special favors to any corporation, but I guarantee you, before you realize it, that law is going to be that well-intentioned regulation is going to be reframed and rephrased and readjusted until it ends up being that the government can only give special favors to big established companies, and that, you know, paving the way or making things equal or fair for smaller startups, that's what's going to be made illegal. That's what's going to violate those regulations. Regulations are a real tricky thing. You're playing with fire with regulations. So instead of passing a law that says government can't give unfair privileges or regulation, our goal is to make government so small that it can't get, that it doesn't have the ability to give special favors to anybody. If government was so small, people wouldn't try to buy special favors. There would be no special favors to buy. If government was so small, government wouldn't be able to tilt the scales towards one business or another, pick winners and losers. Governments wouldn't be able to bail out giant banks at the expense of small banks. Government wouldn't be able to do a single one of those things. By shrinking the size of government, we're making things fair. The problem is not that corporations get special privileges from the government. The problem is that the government can give special favors. And whether the idea is that whether some people find it, offensive or whatever, that in some legal sense corporations are treated as sort of almost like people in terms in a legal sense, that doesn't really get to it. Because, you know, if you took that away, corporations will still get special favors. If there are special favors to be had, the people with the most power and money will try to get them. And they will almost certainly successfully get them. But if government is too small to give any special favors at all, then it can't give any special favors to anybody. And big corporations will go around saying, well, that makes it impossible for small business. No, it doesn't. Trust me. As a small business owner, here's what I want. Government, get the hell out of my way. Stop helping the bad guys. Stop helping the big, giant corporations that provide low-quality products at inflated costs. Stop giving them unfair regulatory advantages. Stop giving them handouts. Stop giving them bailouts. Stop helping the big corporations. That's what you need to do. Government, you need to get out of the way and stop helping the problem. Stop funding the problem. Stop helping the problem. And that can only happen if government is too small to give any money to the problem. If government can't help or save a bank that just is so dumb and incompetent that it runs out of money. When government can't do things like that, then everybody competes equally. Right now, we could have had a much stronger financial sector. You know why? Because we could have said, listen, the dumb financial companies, you guys get to go out of business. The smart ones, you guys get to grow. And yeah, maybe Goldman Sachs wouldn't exist right now. But guess what would exist? That smaller hedge fund, that bank, that whatever smaller group that said, listen, Goldman Sachs is wrong. That would be the new Goldman Sachs. That would be the new bank. We would have smarter people having huge influence on the financial sector, but we don't. We have the same dumbos who created the problems in the first place. So when it comes down to it, it's the legal status of corporations, to me, I believe, is a secondary issue. The primary issue here is that government is able to give special favors, and therefore it's going to give special favors to the worst people, to the people who can buy the special favors. Right now, who gets special favors? Goldman Sachs, Monsanto, all the evil corporations. Who doesn't get special favors? All the mom and pop shops, all the young startups, all the entrepreneurs. We're going to talk a little bit more about this because there's so many interesting questions that are coming in from so many people. We're going to cover this a little bit more. We're going to take a break real quick, but first, if you want to get involved in this thing, we can sit here and talk and discuss all day long, and I love talking and discussing, obviously. But one of the most effective things that you can do is action. When it comes down to it, the number one action you need to take, learn how to run for office. You want to do that, go to lp.org/states, get in touch with the state chair in your state, and see what to do. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be back right after this.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York, Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Some of these next questions were forwarded to me just now from a fellow LNC member, Trent Sums. He is also the chair of the Libertarian Youth Caucus. And here are some of the questions that are coming in. The first question is this. The party calls for the elimination of the IRS and the income tax, but doesn't explain, provides no information on how revenues would be obtained or by whom. It seems a basic issue. Any thoughts? That's a really interesting question. And there's a sort of moderate type of short-term answer, and then there's the answer that shows what we can really do with modern technology. So let's look at the short-term answer. Let's look at the simple thing. How can we get rid of the IRS? Well, as it turns out, if we simply roll spending back to the Clinton era, that's a Democratic president. If we simply roll spending back to the Clinton era, we could get rid of the income tax. In other words, we would literally not have to pay any income taxes if we just brought the government spending down to the level of the Clinton era, not the James Madison era, not the John Adams era, the Clinton era, no income tax. In that situation, what are the other sources of revenue? I mean, there's tons of sources of revenue. Government has buried taxes, as excise taxes, as tariffs, as taxes upon taxes upon taxes. There's a lot of different taxes that it has. So as many other sources of taxes other than the income tax. And so we could get rid of the income tax by rolling spending back to the Clinton levels, but I mean, the implicit question is true. I mean, we wouldn't get rid of all taxes by doing that. We would just get rid of, you know, probably the most hated tax, which is the income tax. The most annoying tax is the most heinous tax. It's a tax on productivity. It's everything that people dislike about tax. When people say how much they hate taxes, they're talking about income tax first. But let's take this to the, I want to take this to the next level, because the real question here is, let's say we got rid of the income tax and the excise tax and all tariffs. How could this country survive? How else could we raise capital? And there's so many interesting answers to it. I'm not going to go into every single possible answer because, you know, we'd be here all day, but I want to highlight a few of the answers. The first big question is usually we have these things that are relatively, you know, necessary for a free and functioning society that involve pretty heavy capital. Most famous one, roads. The question is, we don't have government. How are we going to build the roads? It's a fair question. Now, personally, I also think it's a question that gets maybe more attention than it should, because at the state level, roads are compromised like 1% of the budget, but 99% of the justification for government. So if somebody wanted to, at any state, say, listen, we're going to cut down all spending except for road spending, you know, I'd probably be totally on board with that. That's a great first step. But let's think about this at a level. How would roads be better? I mean, the question is, could we do it alternatively? Of course, we could do it alternatively. I mean, you can raise money through things like Kickstarter. You can raise money through, like, you know, large investment banks. There's a million ways that you can raise capital. And how to pay for roads? I mean, you could pay for it through raised capital, or you could use user fees. I mean, you have things like Easy Pass, so that only if you have an Easy Pass, you can go on the road. So, I mean, the mechanics of it are simple enough. But the question is, why is it any better? I mean, why is it better to do roads in this way than to do roads in the current way? Well, let's ask. Let's think about this. Can roads be made better? In many parts of Mexico, you actually have private and public roads going right next to each other down the same area. The difference, you have to pay to go on the private road. The public road is free. If you want a nicer road, you go on the private road. If you don't really care that much, you go on the public road. The reason I bring that up is sometimes private roads are just nicer. They're maintained better. You see, they're competing for you as a as somebody who's engaging in transportation. The reason I believe that private roads set through either, you know, like mass capital that's usually used to build size skyscrapers and things like that, or, you know, Kickstarter that's often used for major startups. The reason I think that those things are that a private road would be better is because it would be designed to cater to you. Now, you might say, well, there's sometimes only one way to get to a thing, or the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And literally, yeah, fine, technically you're right if we're measuring in distance, but guess what? No one cares about distance. We are a time-oriented society. And I guarantee you this, if there's a road that was built that was an S-shaped curve, but it had higher safety levels that enabled you to drive at 150 miles an hour, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to prefer that private road to the straight line pre-existing road. That's a fact. If it gets you there quicker through whatever means, people will choose that. Now you might say, well, what if I don't want to be on a 150 mile an hour road? And that's the beautiful thing about the free market. Imagine for a moment, like right now, if I want to get from where I'm sitting right now to, say, the Libertarian Party office in Alexandria, there's like 50,000, I mean, there's 50,000 different ways I can do it. I mean, there's so many different choices. I can go through the city. I can go around via the belt. There's like a lot of different ways, and there's a lot of different sub-choices. Now, let's say that there was two different ways to get there that it just had the following different speed limits. Let's say I'm a person, I'm really about safety. I don't want to take any risk. There's a road where the speed limit is kept at 10 miles an hour. I know there is no risk to me at all. There's a market for that. There are plenty of people who want there to be zero risk. They don't mind taking a little bit of extra time. There's also plenty of people who don't mind more risk if they can save some time. They're probably good. What if you had a choice? You could have, there'd be a 50 mile an hour road, there'd be a 10 mile an hour road, there'd be a 200 mile an hour road. See, that's the great thing about the free market. It's that it gives you choice. You see that in restaurants. You see the choice of restaurants. You like that. It's not because you think that Thai food is better than French food. It's just that sometimes you want Thai food, sometimes you want French food. And maybe you just happen to only like Thai food or only like French food, and that's the great thing. It gives you choice. And so how large capital would be done is the same way the large capital is done right now to build large buildings, but the advantages would be the same advantages we see in large buildings. There are different kinds of them. There's different choices. And just based on the type of large building you want to go into, you have different options. Let's get to the next question. The next question is, unclear how much of a military or what kind the party would be prepared to fund. Since that constitutes a huge portion of the annual discretionary budget, it would be interesting to know what they would include. Since they want to make the private sector responsible for most things, I assume they would privatize much, if not all, what the Coast Guard now does, as well as countless other government agencies like NOAA, NASA, the Meteorological Service, FEMA, the National Parks, the Forest Fire Service, etc., etc. None of these were called from the Constitution, so I assume they would be eliminated and the free market allowed to provide them or not. So let's go through them. That's a complex set of questions. First one is, what are we going to do with the military? It's huge. It's problematic. It's creating enemies by occupying other countries. Most people with the military are cautious. You know, there are some people who say, listen, let's just entirely get rid of the whole thing. Now, I certainly have sympathy for that. There's also people that say, well, let's do a first step first and see how that goes. And here's what they say. They say, listen, what if we cut our military spending to the equivalent of the spending done by Russia and China combined? What if we did that? What if we just cut it down to that level, to Russia plus China combined? If we reduce our military spending to that, that seems reasonable. You know, even people who are like, we need a strong military, would probably say, all right, a military as strong as Russia's and China's combined is probably going to be strong enough for any reasonable purpose, especially given that we have a nuclear arsenal that can demolish the planet many times over. We're probably going to be safe if we cut spending to Russia plus China combined. That's an over 60% tax savings. That means we can cut taxes by several thousand dollars a year per family. That is a huge, huge savings. And so that first step is something I think we can all get behind. Cut the military spending to Russia and China combined. It's reasonable. But why is that good? Like, you know, of course, it's one thing that's good is it saves a bunch of money. We keep more of our own money. We don't have to pay as many taxes. But why else is it good? When we cut military like that, here's what happens. First, we have less enemies. I mean, the fact is that right now, our military is basically recruiting for our enemies. When you bomb a hospital, you create enemies. And then your enemies, then those enemies that you've just created are going to join groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. When you bomb a wedding, the same thing happens. When you do all the types of things that the U.S. military has been doing overseas, that happens. And when you stop doing that, it ends. Listen, in 2016, the Libertarian Party gave Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton an outreach award because they'd helped bring so many people to the Libertarian Party. But what do they do? I mean, what is the – what? I mean, yeah, okay, fine. They want to grow government. They want to take more of your money. They want to continue the war on drugs. They want to destroy lives. But neither Hillary Clinton nor Donald Trump, unless you've been the direct victim of a SWAT team, they haven't, like, you know, really authorized somebody to bomb your wedding or bomb a hospital where your family member was trying to get well. Imagine how much more hated they would be if they'd done that. You see, that's what the U.S. military is doing overseas. It's doing things that any reasonable person would hate. It would drive any reasonable person to join a force that's trying to fight that. Here's the good news. We could just pull out right now. Say, listen, we're shutting down these foreign military bases. We're bringing the troops home. We're done with this. We're not invading countries. We're not bombing countries. You know what's going to happen to those countries? What's going to happen to ISIS? What's going to happen to Al-Qaeda? They're not going to be able to recruit anymore. They need us to recruit. They need us to bomb places in order to recruit people. If we don't bomb people, they're not going to have any recruits. They're not going to have any employees. That's the thing about things like organizations like ISIS. They need people to come on board. They need new people to come on board constantly. They need people in foreign countries to join their ideology. But that only works if the U.S. gives them the incentive to. U.S. military, the federal government could just stop doing that. And the second part of that is we could also open up trade. We could get rid of these trade sanctions. Here's what happens when you get rid of trade sanctions. Ideas spread. Foreign countries want to sell to America, they have to learn about American culture. Iran, North Korea, all these places have to learn about American culture, about equality, democracy, all these things. Now, we're going to be right back in a couple seconds to talk a little bit more about some of these incoming questions. But let me say this. Understanding these ideas is very important, but then you have to act on them. The number one way to act on them is go to lp.org. Join your state party. Get involved with your state party. And then figure out how you can run for office. You don't need to be a lawyer. You don't need a degree in political science. You don't need any of those things. You just need to be willing to work to cut government. If you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling, whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Now, I do want to get to the second half of that question. The first half, we talked about how much military would we have. My question is, how much military will we cut? And right now, I think it's reasonable to cut our military to the level of Russia and China combined as a first step. And once we have it there, my bet is that we're going to be able to cut it further until we don't need to have a standing army at all anymore. That would be my prediction. But at the very least, let's cut our military to the level of Russia plus China combined. But so there's a second half of this question, which is, what happens to all these agencies like NOAA, NASA, FEMA, National Parks, Forest Fire, all these kind of things? And the big question is this, is do we think that there would be a demand for these things in the private sector, in the free market? The argument usually is that if something is not being produced by the government, then it won't be produced at all. But often there are things that would be or are being produced by the private sector. So let's look at some of these. Let's look at the Meteorological Service. Is there a private sector demand for knowing what the weather is or what the weather is going to be? With the existence of things like the Weather Channel, you know, Wonderground, all these different sites, I mean, I would say it's pretty obvious, or at least reasonable, that there's a demand for knowing what the weather is. Now, right now, a lot of these weather services use data they get from the government, but guess what? They could also just set up, whatever the government can do, anybody else can do. It's not like the government has some special magic powers that other people can't do. If the demand is there, and the demand is definitely there to know the weather, then that information will be provided. I mean, people are going to find some way. They'll set up their own weather balloons. It might be expensive. It might require raising a lot of capital. You know, there might be huge investors. But listen, people, if Facebook can invest like $1 billion in Snapchat, I'm sure that somebody's going to find at least a few million or maybe a few billion to invest in having, an edge on knowing what the weather is going to be. Then we have things like FEMA. That's when the federal government steps in times of major emergencies. The question is there a market for, essentially, is there a market for insurance? Is there a market for homeowners insurance, for car insurance, for health insurance? I mean, I think the market is that demand exists. Would there be a market for disaster insurance if the federal government didn't provide it? I would assume so. That could be paid for either by neighborhoods, or it could be paid for by individuals, it could be paid for by homeowners. There's a million different ways. My guess would be probably just paid for by individuals. It would probably be bundled in to your homeowners insurance or renter's insurance or whatever. It would be something that you would have to pay for. But guess right, we pay for FEMA right now. It's not like it's free. We pay our taxes for these types of things. Would there be a market for and the other question is, would it be more responsive? That's the question. Is not would it exist? Would it be better? My guess is, yeah, it would be. We saw that FEMA didn't do such an amazingly bang-up job during Katrina, to say the least. We saw the great work of the just volunteer Cajun Navy in Louisiana in the most recent weather situation that they were having. And if there's a, if there's a paid version of it, we can assume that it's probably going to be even better. Let's talk about some of these other things. Forest Fire Service. Is there any way that the free market provide for that? Well, the closest thing that I know of is the various organizations that work to protect the rainforest. That's buying up rainforest, protecting rainforests in foreign areas, and in foreign countries. It seems to me reasonable that we would be able to raise charitable funding for things like that, for the Forest Fire Service and all that. National parks. There's free private parks right now. People say, listen, I've made money. I want to give back to the community. They'll set up a park. And so a lot of these areas, I believe, would be funded privately. Now, sometimes it would be funded for capitalist reasons where people are like, I can probably make some money if I can predict the weather better. I got you on that. And sometimes that'd be set up for charitable reasons. I mean, there are many, many charities that already exist. And, you know, why don't we have a national parks charity right now? Because it doesn't make any sense. It's hard to compete with the government when they create a monopoly on a thing. But if that monopoly was gone, it almost certainly would have a charitable replacement. My guess would be more efficient. If you want to look at some examples that exist right now, the Audubon Society, and that's a private organization, and it does, you know, great work in terms of preserving natural wilderness and all that kind of stuff. So again, these are things that can exist. Many of them already do exist. If the government got out of the way, they'd probably expand a bit. That would be my prediction. Now, it's interesting that one of the same questions coming in from both of our question askers, which is free markets tend towards monopolies and towards having environmental waste and other externalities. So let's look at some of these things. Free markets tend toward monopolies. Well, that is simply not true. It is very difficult to maintain a monopoly without a lot of help from the government. If the government gives you a monopoly, then yeah, you'll probably maintain that monopoly. But otherwise, how do you maintain the monopoly? How do you fight off competitors? What is one private sector organization that's managed to maintain a monopoly? Now, here where I live, there's a monopoly on my electricity. That's a government-granted monopoly. It's not that, like, you know, Pepco is so strong and mighty that no one can compete with them. It's just that's what's been set aside by the government. On the other hand, if you look at the big, mighty, powerful corporations, they all have competitors. I mean, Microsoft has Apple. I mean, you know, every big company I can think of has some competitors. The only ones that don't are the ones who have a government-granted monopoly. You want to talk about one of the biggest monopolies in the world is the Fed. That's a monopoly on creating currency. But guess what? Even though the government has given them a monopoly on currency, guess what? We still found a way to compete. Monopolies are extremely difficult. You know why? Because monopolies usually do something wrong. Just inefficiently, or just annoying. They get lazy. In the example of the Fed that I just mentioned, that's the government created monopoly. And what do? They make an unreliable currency. A currency that keeps losing value over time. To illustrate, 100 or so years ago, if you had $20, you could get an ounce of gold. Or you could get a new suit. Right now, $20 will no longer buy you a new suit. But an ounce of gold will still buy you a new suit. The point is, the Federal Reserve currency, it's just not that good. It's not reliable. It's inflationary. It keeps losing value. It depreciates. So what's happening right now, we have people working on cryptocurrencies. That took a lot of brilliance and innovation to come up with that whole idea, Bitcoin, you know, Ethereum, all these different things, you know, Litecoin, whatever. And so why is that important? Because what I'm trying to say is that even when there's a government monopoly, people still manage to break that monopoly. Free market monopolies are much easier to challenge. Any free market monopoly can get broken, and that's child's play compared to breaking something like the Fed monopoly. And if the Fed monopoly can be broken, any monopoly can be broken. So the free markets tend towards monopoly, and the second part is leaving environmental waste and other externalities. And see, that's a really important one. Environmental waste and externalities. How do we address this issue of environmental waste? Many people argue, and I think I would tend to agree, that the solution to this is complete private property plus the ability to engage in a lawsuit. So, for example, let's say that you own your house, your land, whatever, and you also own the air above it and all that. And somebody pollutes the air, you have the right to sue that person because that person is damaging your property and your health. If somebody dumps a bunch of of stuff in the water that you use, you can sue that person because that person is damaging your water. And so there's a lot of subtlety to something like that. One of the most interesting articles that I've read on this topic is actually talked about the previously mentioned Audubon Society. And it compared the way that the Audubon Society allowed drilling, and interestingly, they did allow oil drilling on their land. But guess what they did? They made sure it was done safely in a way that didn't damage their private property. I don't think the oil drilling companies would have preferred that. They would have preferred to be able to do whatever they want. But the Audubon Society said, no, this is our land. You want to drill here, you do it like this. Compare that to when people use government land. No one owns that land. No one cares about that land. No one has a claim on that land. No one really deeply cares. The bureaucrats who manage that land, that's not their land. They don't love that land. They don't care about that land. That's just some land. That's just their job. It's nothing to them. And it's not their job like they're like their own business. It's just a bureaucratic job. Their job is to oversee this land. And so when it was the government managing land, what happened? We had the BP oil disaster. When it was the Audubon Society managing the land, what did we have? Safe oil drilling. When you make sure that that there's private ownership of land, people will do whatever they can to defend that land. If you are a homeowner right now and somebody says, can they drill in your backyard, you would A, make sure you got fairly paid for it, B, make sure they did it safely and cleanly. I mean, you put a lot of restrictions on that. If somebody said, hey, can I drill in your neighbor's backyard? I'd be like, yeah, fine, do whatever you want. Give me $10. I don't care. You see the difference? It's went slower from your neighbor's yard here. The point is that when you have ownership of land, full, complete, absolute ownership, people care about the land. If you take it to the next level and then say that, you know, let's say that you were able to buy sovereignty rights of your land. That means your land is basically your own country. You defend it even more. The more you own your land, the more you will defend it, the more you care about it, the more you'll do whatever it takes. And that's where environmental protection fundamentally comes from. It doesn't come from giving a bureaucrat control over some land that he doesn't care about or some water he doesn't care about. It's by allowing complete ownership so that people have to care about it as deeply as they care about other things that they own. That the bureaucrats whose job was to oversee the BP oil drilling area, I guarantee you every single one of them probably would more quickly notice any problem with their personal automobile, just a car, no big deal, than they would care. Then they might notice a problem with something as massive as the BP oil drilling situation, which, you know, as we know, had problems before. We had knowable problems before they became, you know, catastrophic problems. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about these right after this. Again, if you want to get involved, please do. And please go to lp.org/state. There has been never a more fun time to be a libertarian. It's never been a better time to be a libertarian. And there's never been a more exciting time to run for office as a libertarian. If you're ready to learn about how to do that, please go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm going to take a couple more questions from the original set from Keith Nolan. We did questions 1 and 2. Now let's get to question number 3. That's it. We live in a constitutional democracy. Isn't it ironic that the Libertarian Party, which preaches small or no government, is also running for federal office? Is it ironic? Yeah, I suppose so, but it's also the most efficient way to cut government. Listen, if I could, as an individual, I would just pardon all nonviolent drug offenders. But I don't have that power. At least I don't have the power in any way that the current prison system is going to pay attention to. So I and other libertarians are running for office. You know, Gary Johnson's running for president. We have people who are running for governor. So many people have talked about specifically who they would pardon. They've talked about what parts of government they would downsize. If I could, from here, without running for office, if I could get rid of the Federal Department of Education, I would. But I can't. That's why I'm voting for Gary Johnson. He specifically said that he's going to do whatever he needs to do to get rid of the Federal Department of Education. Just get rid of it entirely. And so it is, I suppose, in some way ironic, but it is also the only way that I know of to do this without resorting to violence. How does the libertarian philosophy of individualism contribute to the structure we currently have as a society? Well, we live in a society that's greatest strength, I believe, is diversity. New ideas. And I don't just mean, you know, racial diversity, because honestly, that's just not as interesting to me as individual diversity. Depending who you ask, there's, you know, 5, 6, 10, 20 races, but there's millions, billions of individuals. They have great ideas. You want to see what kind of great ideas they have? Go to Netflix. Look at all the – those are lists of great ideas. Go to a library. Those are great ideas. Go to Amazon. Those are great ideas, both in the videos and in the books. You know, go to walk down a business street and look at all the – those are great ideas. And that is what a society is. A society is not a homogenized group of drones. It is people debating and discussing, coming up with new ideas, changing the status quo, threatening the status quo, coming up, enhancing it, expanding, whatever. That's what a society really is. It is not a bunch of people who think the same way. It's a bunch of people who think differently and share ideas. And that's the great thing about the libertarian idea of individual. Libertarian philosophy leads to the strongest, most interesting, most diverse, most engaging society. Next question, private prisons are immoral. Also, the idea that we can build our own roads and bridges is a joke. Well, let's look at both of those. First of all, private prisons are immoral. Well, the issue right now is, you know, what makes a prison immoral is if it's holding somebody for an illegitimate reason. Right now, private prisons and public prisons are immoral because they're holding people for victimless non-crimes. That is not law. That is not engaged, protecting and serving. That's just kidnapping somebody. That's using some facile excuse to lock up a bunch of people. The war on drugs was started by Nixon in order to be able to fight directly against the counterculture revolution of the time. It's been used to lock up minorities. It's been used to lock up political dissidents. That's what it's for. It is not. It is immoral. And so the privateness or the public, I mean, when you have private prisons, yeah, you create a perverse incentive. You create the incentive to have more people locked up. When you have a public prison, you create the government inefficiency and incompetence. The correct solution is not to sit there and debate the private or public, in my opinion, here. It's to say, listen, which of these things are actually crimes? Can we reduce the number of people in prison? Can we say, listen, there's no victim, there's no crime? And that, to me, is where the focus absolutely needs to be. It's ending the war on drugs. It's pardoning heroes like Snowden. It's legalizing anything. It's legalizing all types of voluntary prostitution. Again, we're not talking about unforced human trafficking. We're talking about voluntary, anything that's done voluntarily. And that's where we need to be focusing when it comes down to protecting society. There's a road in Chattanooga that is privately owned by three banks and is a major shortcut between the mall and the highway. That's North Point Boulevard. It's the worst road in town because banks won't spend a dime repairing it. Why should they? There's no profit to be made. Well, you have poorly run businesses. You have well-run businesses. Now, if that, my guess is that road is not making a profit, or just the people who are managing it are just dumb and they're incompetent. But here's the key thing. The number one important thing to pay attention to, there is a road that is privately owned. One road. If there was two roads, there was 10 roads that were competing with each other, I bet they would get better. Now, here in D.C., there's hundreds of roads that are publicly owned. They're not repaired. They're poorly managed. They're covered with just ways to steal from you. And I don't mean Easy Pass, which is a reasonable fee of $2 or $3 or $4. I'm talking about these ridiculous traffic cameras everywhere that are designed to just literally rob you for driving at a normal speed. And so the question is, are there the poorly managed businesses? Yes. Do they fail? Yes. Do they make mistakes? Yes. But do they make gigantic mistakes across the entire country all at the same time? Not really. They make small mistakes, and then they get replaced by better businesses, and that's what happens in business. When it comes to there's no profit to be made, well, I don't think that's true. I mean, there's always profit to be made in transportation. You know, if you have a faster and better way to get to a location, chances are somebody's going to be ready to pay for it. You know, people are always ready to pay money for better transportation. They're probably not going to pay a lot of money for worse transportation. But yeah, if you have worse transportation, people won't pay for it. Let's say somebody comes up with a cell phone app that allows you to pay for access to roads or something like that. That might be more friendly than Easy Pass, which is kind of a pain to install. It's not a pain to install, but it requires you to at least do something. I mean, you actually have to get an Easy Pass and, you know, stick it to your windshield. Like, it's not that difficult. But the point that I'm trying to make is there's plenty of money to be made in roads. We are already paying for roads. We could instead be paying for good roads, for roads that compete with each other to be better and attract customers, just like we pay right now for restaurants and everything else. One more question over here, and this is coming again from Trent. Trent Selms, who's my fellow LNC member, and he's forwarding some of these questions to me. It is not clear whether the party would eliminate the Federal Reserve, the Federal Deposit Insurance Agency, among a number of financial agencies. What do you think? So they talk about eliminating some inflation. It's not clear how they would accomplish this and what they think would be the end result. Let's talk about the Federal Reserve specifically first. I believe, many libertarians believe, that it needs to go entirely. All it's doing is giving us a low-quality currency, an unreliable currency. We believe that you should be allowed to use any currency you want to. If you want to do your business in gold, then you should be allowed to do your business in gold. If you want to do your business using gold certificates, you should be allowed to do that. If you want to do your business using Chuck E. Cheese tokens, you should be allowed to do that. That is your freedom. Now, what happens when you have competing currencies? When currencies compete, you choose the currency that does what you want it to do. And if you're like most business owners or most people, you want money that's not going to lose value over time. Right now, the great advantage of some of the upcoming competing currencies is that they can do things that regular cash simply cannot. Instead of losing value, they can increase value. Instead of being traceable, they can be untraceable. They can be anonymous and untaxable if you want. They can allow you to help defund government by just simply not letting government know that you have the money in the first place. And there's a lot of things that can be done. Now, next week I want to talk a lot, you know, we'll probably talk a little bit more about inflation and all that. Really quick, when we talk about the FDIC, what does that mean? That means that banks, it's the Federal Deposit Insurance Agency. What does it allow? It allows banks to be reckless because they know that they're going to get bailed out by the government. And that's a problem. Consumer banks should be careful. Consumers should be careful about which banks they choose. And that cautiousness, carefulness is what anything financial should be built on. I mean, that's and anything that allows or encourages recklessness is dangerous. Now, we didn't really get a chance to talk about that last one properly, and that's a very complicated one. We'll address it next time that we have, you know, one of these segments on answering some questions. But all of these things are, as interesting as they need to be acted on, and that requires all of us to do our part. And your part might be using your skill in social media, or maybe you're very gregarious, you like to go out and about and talk to people. Some of it might be using your skill, but let me tell you, the number one thing you can possibly do, running for office. When you run for office as a libertarian, you bring so much attention to these ideas. And second, you force the Democrats and Republicans to adjust. Democrats and Republicans right now are like that one road in Tennessee that we were talking about earlier. It's not very good. It doesn't have to compete. Democrats and Republicans don't think they have to compete, but when they do have to compete, they get in shape. You start voting libertarian, running for office libertarian, you put pressure on them to behave themselves, to start cutting government. That's the number one thing that we can be doing right now. If you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org/states. Thanks for listening today. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.